It's time for the Your Personal Bank Show with Ferenc Stoth. In an era of chaos, confusion, and craziness, Ferenc is a voice for common sense. As a financial literacy educator, speaker, and entrepreneur, Ferenc cuts through the noise to help us understand how current events affect our money, economy, and our freedom. Now, here's Ferenc Stoth.
This is Ferenc, host of the Your Personal Bank Show, and welcome. We have a very special show today. I have one of our favorite guests, John Burley, and before I have John join us, I have an exciting event to announce. We will be doing an event with John Saturday, January 18th in Phoenix. We'll be discussing a number of things that day. In fact, John, first of all, welcome to the show.
Oh, so great to be back. Really exciting time we're in today.
Awesome. And what are you going to be sharing at the event on January 18th?
I'm really looking forward to it, Ferenc. My best-selling book, Money, Secrets of the Rich, we cover the seven levels of investors, where someone can clearly identify where they're at and what they need to do to upgrade their money so they can move forward financially. We're going to cover that first. Then there's seven steps. We call them the seven money secrets of the rich. And we're going to teach those to you step by step, the seven things that people who consistently end up rich do that a lot of people just have gaps in. So we're going to show you how to fill those and cover those real simple stuff, but very advanced at the same time. And then we're going to cover the one of the things I love is the automatic money system, which is how to really make your money work. And then we're going to finish up with how to safely and securely make far more money than the stock market investing in real estate directly.
That's awesome, John. And I'll be sharing how to grow your money insured, guaranteed, tax-free, highly liquid, how your personal bank can actually enhance your financial situation, whether it's personal, business investments, or even real estate investing. So I can't wait to share the stage with you, work together, and we'll also be doing a Q&A, I understand.
Yeah, it's going to be a great, great day. We're going to kind of go back and forth, money and the different investment techniques that go along with that. We're going to finish up with a Q&A. Also, one thing that's really, really exciting is there'll be a lot of other very, very successful investors there, people who literally have made not just millions, but some of them tens of millions of dollars personally investing. And so you'll be there with them. You'll have lots of chances to network and meet really, really successful people that can help take you further in your career.
And I'll have a number of your personal bank clients that have been successfully using this tool for years. So you're going to have a tremendous opportunity not only just to learn from both John and I, but also meet, like he said, other people who are successful at using these tools. So again, it's January 18th. If you're interested in more information, register at yourpersonalbank.com. Again, that's yourpersonalbank.com. We'll be talking more about that in the future, but super excited. Can't wait for it, John.
Awesome. It's going to be a fantastic event, Ferenc. I'm really, really excited. And I do love the end because one of the things we do traditionally with a great event like this is we finish up with a completely open Q&A. So anything you want to ask, you can ask. So just because I've been to so many events where all they do is give their speech, but then there's no questions, there's no answers, there's nothing that really brings it all home. So we finish the day up with that very, very powerful segment every time.
That is a great point, John, because this event is for you. It's for you to learn and to meet other successful investors. And we're thankful it's being sponsored by Money Radio. This is just going to be a great event.
Yeah, well, we were talking with Ron earlier, who is Money Radio. And so it's super exciting. Shout out to you again, Ron. Thanks. We look forward to having them as a sponsor. And it's going to be an amazing event. So we'll see you guys there. Go to yourpersonalbank.com, and you can get all the information and get booked in.
January 18th in Phoenix. Be there. Don't miss it. All right. So, John, Trump's going to be the next president. How's that? How do you see that affecting real estate going forward?
Well, it was an amazing event. It was an exciting event, you know, and obviously, you know, the majority spoke, but the minority, they're Americans and they're here with us. And so we'll all move forward together and rebuild this thing called America, how we want it to be rebuilt in a much better light. And so I'm really, really excited about it. It was interesting. I was in Pennsylvania that night. I was out making some speeches and doing some educational events. And so I was literally in Pennsylvania with a friend. We stayed up till 4 in the morning. He was afraid it was going to get stolen. So he was like, we got to stay up until they call it for sure.
I had some of those same feelings.
Yeah. And I mean, it was amazing watching the quote unquote, I don't know why they call it a blue wall, but watching, you know, Pennsylvania. And Pennsylvania getting the Senate. I mean, these were such amazing friends. My friend was just like so proud of his state and that, you know, they had made that change because they hadn't been going the direction he wanted them to go. And so it was really, really cool. And I think it means a lot of good things for everybody in America. You know, and then, you know, starting out as far as what's going to do for money investing. Well, obviously there's the emotions. And a lot of people really believe that emotions are – that markets are moved by logic, but they've never been moved by logic. They're moved almost entirely by emotions, and then people would explain what happened with logic afterwards. It's why most people who predict things are so wrong, because logic does not come into play. I mean, obviously, going into the election, the pollsters like, this is too close to call. Well, it wasn't too close to call, even a little
close
bit. Not
at
even
all.
It wasn't even kind of close. I mean, this wasn't Reagan in 84, but this was a pretty big vote that we want to go somewhere differently. And I think that was really important is for most people, it was two things. It was the economy and it was immigration stuff. And those are the two big issues for most Americans. And so on the economy side, you know, here's the reality as I see it. We are currently in a recession. When politicians admit to a slowdown, that's a recession. When they say it's a recession, it's depression. I mean, let me help out. In 2008, that was not the Great Recession. That was a Great Depression. It was the fourth one in our country's history. We've only had four, but I mean, that was a real depression. You know, with this, I think where we're at right now is there's a lot of euphoria and a lot of good emotion. There's a lot of let's try and lower interest rates a little bit more. But we do need to remember we are currently in a recession. And so it's going to have to run a little bit more. And Trump becoming president doesn't instantly undo the trend that we're moving through. So it'll go through. I think we're going to have a softer landing than we were looking at. And I think it's going to turn around a lot faster than we were looking at.
Well, one of the points I've been bringing up is, like you just said, John, absolutely all those things. But there's some problems that even if the Trump administration does everything right from a financial standpoint, the debt, that's not going to get fixed overnight.
No, and I don't think right now, and probably appropriately, there's not a lot of focus on fixing the debt by either party for quite a while, if we're going to just be right up front with it. I think that, you know, a lot of things can be done that are just common sense business that can streamline things, make things more effective. Elon Musk getting involved and being in charge of efficiency, oh my goodness.
That's a game changer in my opinion.
Oh, massive, massive. If he's allowed to do what he needs to do.
Right.
Because obviously, you know, we all know this. I mean, in the government, there's just way, way too many employees compared to the private sector. And that means, you know, severance packages, buying people out, helping them transition back into the regular world. I mean, obviously, the government archaic pension system is, you know, bankrupting America. We can't pay for that. I mean, you can't pay for people to be retired for years and years and years before retirement age. And the idea of a guaranteed pension, I mean, you know, they need to move to a private sector model where you're responsible.
Like everyone else.
Like everybody else for your own money. And I think it's there. I think the tariffs to level the playing field are an amazing long-term play, and I think it's bold in a great way that President Trump is doing that. In the short term, those don't help, but in the long term, they're game-changing.
And I think that's one of the points I've been making is, overall, yes, I'm very bullish, very excited about the longer-term future now, but there's going to be some volatility. There's going to be some bumps in the road to get there.
Yeah, and for everybody listening, you know, this is really – you know, start trying to think, if it's appropriate for you, how I can position myself to take advantage in a contrarian position. Because if you look at every great investor in the history of America, they're all contrarians. When everybody was buying, they're selling. When everybody's selling, they're buying. When everybody says this is no good, they're looking for the opportunities. I mean, the greatest contrarian is Warren Buffett.
Right now, yeah, everybody's market's up and he's selling.
Yeah, because, well, it's because it's really, really up. It's like, you know, the oldest axiom in the stock market, you know, where I come from originally was, you know, we ride your winners and cut your losers. Yet most people, unfortunately, do the opposite. Their stock goes up 10, 20%. They sell it. So they go, woohoo, I won. And you could just use a parabolic stop and different tools to protect your things. And then when a stock goes down, it's like, well, I don't want to take a loss. So they hold on to the dog for 3 years, waiting until it comes back to break evensies, not even thinking about, wow, if I had sold it for a loss and then taken it and bought good stuff, not hoping for a comeback, but good stuff, I would have made more money. So as a contrarian right now, when I look at this market, whenever there's change, there's tremendous opportunities, and we're going to have a lot of tremendous buying opportunities. They're just going to be popping up and popping up. I know we're very, very excited. I'm so grateful for our country. I'm so proud of our country. I think this was a change we needed, and to focus back on the most important issues, you know, for the majority, which is the economy. You know, and that's been the number one job for a long time of the any administration. And when administrations really apply themselves to growing the economy, a lot of other things just fall into order for the country. And so I love that being the first priority, second priority obviously being, you know, immigration, controlling immigration. President-elect Trump, you know, he knows that this entire country was built on immigrants. Heck, almost all of us are from a family of immigrants. But it's got to be controlled. It's got to be orderly. It's got to be in a manner that makes sense for everybody.
Well, at the very least, we should know who's here. They should be vetted.
Yeah, I mean, and that's how it always was.
Right.
I mean, you know, a country this big, this large, there's always going to be some people that are getting in because, you know, we have more open borders than almost any country in the world. And so it's just exciting to see that, you know, we're going to get a handle on that. We're only going to have the growth that makes sense for us because this our economy and our country needs new people coming in to join the workforce every year. But we don't want too many. And we want to be doing it in a more orderly fashion. We're getting people that are fitting spots that are needed rather than just whoever wants to come. So I'm really, really excited. I'm very, very optimistic. You know, I understand there's still going to be some bumps. I understand there's going to be some sectors that have some pain coming. And I understand that everything isn't going to be fixed overnight. The emotions are, wow, it's fixed overnight. But that's also only the emotions for a little more than half. It's not the emotions for 100%. And that needs to be taken into account for in every way as far as, you know, working together as a country and reuniting as a country and pulling our resources and, you know, lessening the divides and the divisions, especially those among families and friends. It's just
it's sad.
Just crazy. Yeah, it's sad. I mean, I grew up in a family where about 40 weeks a year, the whole family got together for Sunday dinner, and there was a lot of differences of opinion. And at the end of the night, my grandfather would always remind everybody, we're family, and we love each other, and it's okay that we disagree, and we give each other a hug, say goodnight, and see you next Sunday.
That's really good advice. Well, I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned. We've got John all the rest of the show for us, and we're going to cover a lot more things about real estate. In fact, the next question I'm going to ask him is one I asked him about a year ago, and I said, if Trump won, which he has now, and deports literally millions of people, how will that affect real estate? So I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned to listen to what he has to say. But of course, don't miss our special event John and I will be doing January 18th. Register at yourpersonalbank.com. Space is extremely limited, so I encourage you to do so earlier rather than later because we've never done this before, John. It's the first time.
I'm excited. This first event we've done together is going to be amazing.
I think it'll be awesome. So stay tuned in the next segment. Don't miss it. Economic freedom is freedom, and our freedoms are under attack. I'm Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. In this time of uncertainty, can you grow your money safely, reduce taxes, and ensure you don't run out of money in retirement? Your Personal Bank earns dividends with guarantees, insured and tax-free. For more info, tune in to the Your Personal Bank Show or contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to contact me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Also, we have a special event January 18th with John Burley that I'm going to encourage you to register for at the same place. John, what are you going to be sharing with us at that event?
Really, really excited. So we've got a book, Money, Secrets of the Rich, that sold over a million copies. The core components of the book we're going to be covering right out of the gate that morning. We're going to cover the seven levels of investors. So you can clearly identify where you are and then personally make the choices of what you need to do to upgrade to higher levels of investor, which assures your financial success. We're going to go over the seven money steps of the rich. You know, I've been blessed over the decades to have over 1,000 clients that we placed money for that were deca-millionaires to billionaires. And what they did across the board isn't what a lot of people do. Certainly not what they teach on Instagram. And so we're going to share with you what wealthy people really do with their money and how they became wealthy. And most importantly, the habits that they had when they were rich, they developed before they got rich. So we're going to show you what those habits are. And there's seven money steps of the rich. And anything that includes the automatic money system, which will put your money on autopilot. We'll show you how to do that. And then we're going to show you how to safely and securely make far more than the stock market by investing in real estate.
Well, that's awesome, John. We're going to be working together that day because I'll be sharing how your personal bank concept can grow your money, insured, guaranteed, tax-free, highly liquid, and enhance your investing, whether it's business, personal, real estate, you name it. So first time we've worked together, I'm really excited, looking forward to it. January 18th, sponsored by Money Radio. Go to register at yourpersonalbank.com and hurry because space is limited.
Yeah, it's very, very limited. So we're excited and we look forward to seeing you, on January 18th.
Love it. So, John, we talked about this about a year ago. I'd asked this question and I could tell it's a question nobody else have ever asked you because you had to think about it a minute. But now that Trump's going to be the next president, clearly making a priority of deporting illegals, which means, you know, they had to live somewhere, right?
Yes.
There looks like many of them are going to be gone, maybe to the tune of millions even. How do you see that impacting real estate, particularly rental?
It's going to have a large impact. So any big change means lots of opportunities, good and bad. So I know that it was really interesting. If you were just going to vote for your pocketbook, a lot of people that were touting vote Trump should have been voting for the other party. So right now we are across America, not every single city, but across America overall, we are massively overbuilt with what is classified as what's called Class C or Class D building. Wall Street actually made up Class D because it was always Class A, which is really nice properties, Class B, which is solid middle class, Class C, which is lower income. Wall Street even made up Class D, like, you know, Class C didn't have enough challenges. And so right now in America, they have massively overbuilt Class C and Class D buildings. So there are all these apartments, and in many areas, there literally is a glut of apartments. And these are predominantly people who are a large portion of those residents, their rent's being paid for by the government. A large portion of these people are here because this is where they can go into and afford. And these buildings have large vacancies. So this sector, so the commercial real estate sector of the multi-units in the lower economics, is going to get hammered. A lot of these, literally, they were already on a lifeline, man. They needed desperately for the other party to win. They needed immigration to continue largely unregulated, regulated, it didn't matter. They just needed more bodies to move in, and they needed government to pay for those bodies. And
your statement right there, John, explains what I always say. If you want to understand why somebody's fighting so hard for something like that, just follow the money.
Yeah, just follow the money. Yeah, and so literally, you know, if the other party had won, then this sector would be back to being a little golden child again. But this sector is like hurting hard. You're going to have a lot of opportunities. We already have, not in residential real estate because there are different sectors not in the Class B, B plus, A minus apartment size building. Those are doing great. They actually need more. It's the lower income ones that were overbuilt. A lot of government money, opportunity zones. So people bought for the tax side, not for, does this make sense as an investment? Is there actually a client who wants to live in the buildings? You know, common sense stuff. And so it's going to get blasted hard. And for people that are on that, that is a rocky ride. Now, they already had a lot of defaults going on. They'll now begin to proceed with the foreclosures, and that'll happen more and more. So there will be some great opportunities because a lot of those buildings, they're like some of the big, big buildings you see in a lot of cities downtown. The people that build them never were going to build them with money. It was never going to pencil at 100% occupancy. They were always going to lose. And so with this, a lot of these buildings were just that. They didn't work at their price, but at 40 or 60 cents on the dollar, they work.
Well, John, I've been traveling the country a lot in the last year or two, and you're right that there were a lot of them in the cities, but what I found was surprising is how many we found in the small towns.
Oh,
they're spread out everywhere.
Yeah, well, because Wall Street, predominantly 98% of Wall Street works for a fee, not for profit. A lot of people just really don't understand what that means. That means they have no agenda nor objective to make you money at all. Never did, never will. 98% of it is just how can we generate fees? So they were building, they call it these tertiary markets. They come up with the best buzzwords. So it's like, you know, they're building in Evansville, Indiana. I mean, you know, little places in Oklahoma, North, all over the country in these little towns that had no need for the buildings, who already were, you know, 20, 25% rental properties vacant. And they're building all these new buildings. Like if I put it here, it'll be magic and it'll work. And so those are just, they were catastrophic. It was a really long shot it would ever work. But again, the people who did it, they already made their money on the fees. If it goes down, it goes down. They just do it again. That's what they do.
Do you think there'll be any spillover effect? Because obviously these properties are going to be either have to reduce their rents dramatically to get anybody in or sell them at a discount.
Do you think
spillover effect?
Yeah, I think the spillover is with a lot of them, especially in these smaller markets that you're mentioning. There literally was not anybody to live in them for any rent. So they're gonna fall off, and then when they come back out at a lower price, and again it's government money, now it's gonna be choices: do I want the new mediocre built Class C building, or do I want to live in the old Class C house or building? So you probably get some people transition and move, but a lot of those, it's gonna be nothing like eight, but a lot of those are simply gonna go into limbo, parents, where they're gonna sit for a year to 3 years while the government and the banks figure out when, how, if, where we foreclose. Because the default rate is already rising quite a bit, which is obviously the exact opposite of single family homes.
Okay.
So we can, you know, just like most people are really aware, look, wow, office buildings are hurting.
Right.
In most big cities, single family homes aren't. That's a sector that's strong. That sector is actually underbuilt, and there's a shortage. It's not like people have to live in the street because there's no home, but there's a shortage of newer, nicer, more modern. Because a lot of people are still living, depending where you live, the neighborhood's, 30 to, back on the East Coast, 80, 100 plus years old. And so a lot of that infrastructure is a lot older. So people want a newer, larger product. It's there. So we always look at the different sectors. I've invested across the board in my career on the real estate side. And I just go to where the greatest returns are and the greatest profits. And that comes with the greatest stability. And the single family homes right now are amazing in that regard.
There's also some the Trump administration is discussing like reducing regulatory costs for new builds.
Oh,
various things like that to enhance new home building.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you see happening in that arena?
I think the Fed's going to do what they can, as much as they can do on that, and then hopefully the states will pay more attention, because there's a lot of very high priced markets where it is literally $500,000 plus. I know in San Francisco to do conversions of office buildings to single-family homes, it was estimated, the last report I saw, that it was literally 1,000 docs, 30 months, and $865,000 before you put a nail in a wall to convert office to, the office buildings that are sitting vacant, to convert them to single-family. It's like, well, $865 administrative costs, we're not talking low-income housing. So it's just crazy. So that's got to be shifted. That's got to be changed. I'm excited about the idea of Elon Musk just introducing efficiency. Because every president in my lifetime that's taken over, they inherit and they're saddled with a huge, huge employment obligation and payroll that's beyond ridiculous, along with then the pension and guaranteed retirements. If you're to look at the United States federal government like a business, there's a large number of employees that simply are redundant and or don't provide much economic value that aren't needed anymore. And so, there's got to be a movement in that direction long term. If you really want to address the deficit and those things, then you need to cut down the expenses of the manpower, which, of course, means severance packages, people having to transition out of the workforce or go to early retirement. The federal government, obviously, this writing has been on the wall for 20 years. The guaranteed huge pensions need to go away. The government needs to go where the private sector is. You have to learn how to invest. You have to do your 401k, your IRA, and your own investing, and you need to learn how to make it to grow. The idea that you work somewhere for 20 or 30 years and retire and are taken care of for the rest of your life, that's so antiquated and so gone, and it was never what America was supposed to be about.
Well, and Elon recently stated he thought he could save $2 trillion a year in the government spending. He was scoffed at about that, but then he said he thought, no, there's so much waste and bloat. He said it was probably one of the easiest things he's ever going to do.
Oh, super easy. Yeah, no, compared to the private sector where you go into a mostly efficiently run company where you now have to take your time to identify. I remember, companies that would do like severance packages. I remember in the mid-80s, I had a friend who was one of the directors at Intel, and it's like going, you guys are laying off 8% and you let them decide who leaves? He was like, well, it's hard to identify who the 8% are. It's like, well, no, you had the managers identify the 8% of their employees who are the least productive. And if the manager can't figure out who that is, you already know who one of them is, the manager. And so just the idea that, you know, we can't identify. Because clearly in the private sector, I mean, when you're in the small business, I mean, if I need to lay off employees, I lay off my employees that produce the least.
Exactly.
And if you don't know that, then your business isn't very good. And so I think it's great. And I think there are trillions of dollars, not billions, trillions of dollars that are just wasted every year because this is how we've always done it. I had a godfather who was a general manager decades ago for one of the departments, one of the Department of Interior. And literally his first year, he had a surplus and he wanted to return it. And there was no mechanism to return it. And he was told, go buy stuff. It's like, I don't need anything. They're like, go buy stuff. Spend the money.
Well, there's discussing zero-based budgeting now, which I'm excited about. We'll hit on that in the next segment. If you want to join us at the event John and I will be doing January 18th, go register at yourpersonalbank.com. Space is extremely limited. This is the first time we've done anything like this. Highly encourage you to join us. Stay tuned to the next segment. We're going to cover some more great stuff. This is Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. My show focuses on creating tax-free buckets of money, insured, guaranteed, highly liquid, and the ability to create positive arbitrage. Did you know this is the best time in over 40 years to invest in index annuities? An index annuity allows you to, one, grow your money safely without market risk. Once gains are locked in, they're guaranteed against future market loss. Two, double-digit potential upside on good market years with no losses in bad years. Principal is guaranteed. Three, a 7-8% fixed interest option is available in the first year. If you're interested in growing your money with potential index-related gains without downside market risk, this is the best time in over 40 years to consider an annuity. If your annuity is over 2 years old, the newer products likely have far superior potential returns. Please contact me at yourpersonalbank.com or 866-268-4422 for more info. That's yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. If you want to reach me, you can do so at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. It's yourpersonalbank.com. We've got an exciting event with John Burley coming up January 18th in Phoenix. I'm going to highly encourage you to join us. John, what are you going to be sharing at that event?
Yeah, we're really excited. We're going to be sharing the foundational skill sets and then advanced skill sets. One of the first things we're going to do is we're going to go over the seven levels of investors. So you can clearly identify exactly where you are at right now and then what you need to upgrade to the higher levels and give people rock solid information to start the year out with that they can take an action on, simple action immediately to make their financial lives better forever. We're going to cover, you know, within that, there's the seven money steps of the rich. There are things that people who are rich do that the rest of people don't do as well. And that's just what it is. People say like, well, the rich keep getting richer and the poor get poorer. And it's kind of like, well, yeah. And what did you think was going to happen? If your habits and your skill sets and what you do with your money is poor, well, that'll continue. You'll get more of that. You'll get poorer. And if your habits and your steps and your action is to get richer, then you'll continue to get richer. So, yeah, of course the rich are going to get richer and the poor get poorer. That'd be like going, boy, those that work out get healthier and those that don't get unhealthy, like there's something wrong or bad about that. It's like, no, those were choices. And so we're going to show you how to make a lot better choices for your own money. And then we're going to get into advanced investing. And we're going to show you how you can safely and securely make far more than the stock market investing in real estate.
And that's awesome. And I'll be sharing how to think like a banker, how to invest, how to get positive arbitrage. A lot of people say, what is that? It's basically creating cash flow on your money, much like real estate investors do with property. It's a very common tool used by the wealthy, by banks and other entities. And I'll be sharing those ideas. And I'm really excited about sharing that with you and doing some Q&A and meeting some other great investors have worked with both of us that'll be attending the event.
Yeah, well, it's one of the really exciting things for you guys that are listening that you come down. You can literally walk into a room and, yeah, there'll be new investors And then there'll be mid-level, but there will be a high number of very successful investors. And I'm talking people who in 3 to 5 years created over $10 million. There'll be one lady there who's created literally $120 million in 5 years. So there'll be some very sophisticated investors there for you to rub elbows with, to hobnob with, to have lunch with, to talk to at the breaks. And then I love what we'll be doing is we finish up the event with a completely live open mic Q&A. Whatever you want to ask, we'll answer. And that's how it should be. So I'm looking forward to it.
Exactly.
January 18th.
January 18th, register, yourpersonalbank.com. Space is limited. Do it quick.
Super limited.
Absolutely. So, John, we've been talking about a lot of government efficiency stuff that you're really excited about going forward. And I've heard a number of people, Elon and others, discussing how they want to put the government into a what's called zero-based budgeting. Now, what is that? What is that? How is that going to make a difference? You use the example how the government used to do it.
Right. I think it's, you know, I think that overall, if we move the government to a more private sector-like, now look, it can never be full private sector because there are departments that simply are there to increase the value in humans' lives. And sometimes you can't put a metric on that that's there. But for most things, there's a metric. And we're failing miserably on a federal level with meeting any metrics that make any sense for the amount of dollars that are spent. Because, you know, I have friends who are very high up in the military, and they're like going, yeah, no, it's not a joke. There really have been $800 toilet seats. I mean, just this stupid stuff.
John, when I was in the Army, my roommate was the supply sergeant.
Oh, wow.
And he told me about $800 hammers in the 1980s.
Yeah, and this is just, this nonsense needs to end. Yeah. You know, bringing in someone like an Elon Musk for efficiency just to, I mean, shaving a regular company with very little pain if everybody buys into it. An efficiently run company can knock 8 to 10% off of their cost overnight. With the government, I mean, there's literally 20, 30, 40% of the money is just being thrown away. It's just, it's horrible. And so the idea that we're going to officially run it, we're going to actually, in many of the different departments, you know, actually have metrics where this is what's needed. Also actually looking at the amount of employment. I mean, the federal government is so bloated, this that we can't fire anybody and that we never let anybody go. I mean, that just is not what you want.
That's not real world.
I mean, yeah. I mean, this isn't a school. We don't want tenure. For people who are, you know, working in an office building, it's like, you know, you have to do your job and you have to do your job really, really well to keep your job. And that's how it should be. So I think, you know, there's some short-term pain. You know, if you really want to tackle the budget, that means we spend less money. That means you can't spend it how you are now. You have to, there's only way to cut the budget is we have to reduce spending for real. And that means some people won't get what they want. And that means hard choices need to be made for a greater good. But I'm looking forward to that.
Well, you know, that's true with any household or business.
Yeah. Remove the inefficiencies, though. That's the nice thing in the government. I mean, no one really knows. But most people think that 30, 40, some people believe 50, 60, 70% of the money in the federal government that's spent never needed to be spent.
Right. And then one of the other, one of the most, I think, long-term benefits to this is with all this extra money comes power, and it has attracted a lot of people. That we get frustrated because it doesn't seem like the representatives are representing us because they have other interests.
Yeah.
Because there's so much power and money involved.
It shouldn't be there.
If you siphon a lot of that away, a lot of that incentive will go away with it.
Yeah. You know, two things that pop in the mind. First of all, Democratic President Harry S. Truman, I think he said it best. Anybody who gets into politics to get rich is a crook. And they are. Yeah. That's not what it's supposed to be about. It certainly wasn't what our founding fathers did. In fact, for them, it was the opposite because you didn't get paid diddle. And they were, you know, not well off financially after the Revolutionary War and all that. And so, you know, I really, really look forward to moving to more where the government becomes more service. And this is giving back. You know, I admire so much what President Trump did. Because if you look at history, huge wealthy people, people who are in that top, not couple percent, but the top, you know, 0.02% of wealth in America. Historically in America, those last 10 working years, that man or woman, that family, doubles their wealth. And President Trump clearly knew that and chose to serve his country rather than double his family's wealth.
His wealth actually went down in his first term.
Yeah, which is, well, that would be traditional for how it used to work.
Right.
Washington's wealth didn't go up while he was president. It went down because he wasn't home minding the store.
Jefferson struggled.
Jefferson.
Mightily.
Mightily. Well, the first three presidents had assets but were cash flow poor and literally relied on friends, not family, but friends to take care of them and pay their bills while they were president of the United States. Because they did it for reasons that had nothing to do for money, obviously.
It was an obligation.
It was something they wanted to do to serve. And so I look forward to that. I look forward to more great business people on a bipartisan level coming and getting involved. Because this is just business and running our country. The election's over. We don't have another big election for 4 years. So let's set the differences aside and move together as a country, as a family, and take care of what needs to be done. And reducing cost. It's so much easier to reduce cost and increase revenue. To reduce costs. In the private sector, it's always easier to reduce cost than it is to increase revenue. So let's reduce cost. And for us, increase revenue is more taxes. We don't want to increase revenue.
I use this example all the time with people in terms of that. Let's assume for a minute you got a $1,000 a month raise at your job. Or you paid off a bill that was costing you $1,000 a month. Which would you be more excited about?
I'd be more excited about paying off the bill.
Right. Well, most people answer the raise. We get all excited. Hey, I got a raise. I said, well, you do realize you're going to have to pay tax on that additional money, right? So depending on your bracket, that might be worth, you know, not $1,000 a month, maybe $750, maybe $600, maybe less.
Yeah. And then a lot of people, of course, then they just go out and buy something
right
for $1,000 a month, and they didn't even get $1,000.
No, they got like $600 or $700, really,
right,
after tax.
Yeah,
but if you wipe out a thousand dollars,
the new Tesla looks good.
Yeah, but if you wipe out $1,000 a month bill, you keep that. You just added $1,000 a month to your cash flow.
Yeah, and paying off that $1,000 a month bill also then gives you so much more power going forward. First of all, for an individual looking at retirement or looking to be able to end it, one of the biggest things to do is to reduce the monthly burden, the debt, so that you don't need to have as much. A lot of people are like, oh, I need $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 a month to retire. It's like, well, wait a minute. If you paid off all your debt, how much do you really need?
Right.
You know, if your life was insurance, food, and fun, how much do you need?
Exactly.
It's, you know, there's, and we're going to talk about that at the event on January 18th. We're going to talk about that there's more than one way. You don't need to just make more money. That's one way to do it. And we're going to teach you how to do that, but we're also going to teach you how to reduce costs, reduce expenses, be more efficient with your money, and a lot of skill sets that will really help people out.
And I know it's a plug for the personal bank, but that's why I'm such a big fan of tax-free growth in your money.
Absolutely.
Your money, less expense.
Less
you keep
expensive.
More of it.
Oh, God.
It's that simple.
Thank goodness. We at least, hopefully for another 20 years, we've taken off the table the idea of taxing profits that haven't been realized. That's insane. Because the other question was, well, if the market goes down, do we now get a refund check for the losses on paper?
Of course not.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah. It's like, you know, all employees should participate in the profitability of the company. So during a COVID, are all employees going to send a check into the company while the owner's covering it and floating it?
Yeah, unrealized capital gain is nothing more than when the assets go up in value, the government wins, and when the assets go down in value, you lose.
Right, because if you're going to do an unrealized capital gain, that also is capital loss. So that would mean if the stock market was down and my $1 million are on paper only worth $600, although I haven't taken a $400,000 loss, if you're going to tax me on the gain, you need to give me a refund on the loss, which you can't do. You can't do either of them.
Exactly. And the other issue I had was, you know, I'm always against big government. Less is better. Who is going to determine the value of that asset?
Oh, you couldn't. You'd need another 85,000 IRS agents.
I mean, look at real estate appraisals. I mean,
they're all over.
It's all over the place.
Yeah.
What's that property really worth? Well, you don't know until you actually sell it.
Right. And in the real world, most appraisals are nothing more than, what'd you sell it for? Okay, so you don't want me to actually give you the real value. You want me to to support the price it's being sold for so you can buy it. And that's what the appraisal is. It's not an actual appraisal. And
neither is Zillow,
no,
by the way.
Zillow's advertising. All it ever was is an appraisal, even the best appraisal in the world. All it is one person's opinion in one moment of time of what one building is worth.
Right.
And you could have 10 different appraisers and you'd have 10 different numbers.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to encourage you to stay tuned in the next segment. Of course, for this event, January 18th with John and I, go to yourpersonalbank.com to register. Do it soon because space is limited. We're really excited. First time we've ever done anything like this.
It's going to be exciting. We'll see you guys there.
All right. Stay tuned in the next segment. We'll finish up with some more great information with John Burley. Don't miss it.
When people contact me, they often ask, what exactly do you do? And yes, if you contact me, I, Ference, host of the Your Personal Bank Show, will respond, not an assistant. I help people increase their returns, reduce taxes, increase positive cash flow, and reduce market risk. I accomplish your goals using various financial tools, including your personal bank. If you have questions or would like to discuss your situation, contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show with Ference Toth. Want more information? Contact Ference at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. Now back to the show with Ference Toth.
Welcome back to the Your Personal Bank Show. This is Ference. You can reach me at yourpersonalbank.com. Yes, you will reach me. It's yourpersonalbank.com. Of course, I'd be remiss if I don't remind you, we have a great event coming up with John Burley, Saturday, January 18th in Phoenix, sponsored by Money Radio. I will be covering a lot of information on investing, what's going on in the economy. The last several workshops I've done, people have loved what I've shared, what the Federal Reserve has done, what to expect, interest rates, all those types of things, how tax-free, creating a tax-free bucket of money can make a lot of sense, whether you're just investing privately with your business or in real estate. John, what will you be sharing?
You know, I love it because it's going to be in January. So January 18th, it's the start of the year. It's a fresh start, a fast start. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to go over the seven levels of investor. And that's where you clearly identify exactly where you're at. And then you identify the characteristics, the traits, and the action steps you need to take simply with a small amount of effort to move forward and progress even quicker. You know, within that, there's the seven money steps of the rich. There are things that people who are rich do overall differently. And this isn't just going to be a bunch of memes and cliches. This is going to be, again, specific action steps that you can do to upgrade your money, to pay down your debt faster, to build your investments up faster and then have them grow even more powerfully than they already are. We're also going to go with the automatic money system, where if you want to, you can just really set things on autopilot with three simple steps that we go over with. Which are a big part of the book, Money Secrets of the Rich, which sold over 1 million copies. It was actually in 2006, businessman Donald Trump wanted me to put that in the book I did with him, Wealth Building 101, which is a phenomenal number one seller. And then we're going to talk about, in the last segment that day, we're going to talk about how you can safely and securely make far more money in the stock market investing in real estate. And then, of course, what I love is we're going to finish up the day, you and I together, open mic, Q&A, any questions that you have, ask them and we'll answer them. And so that's always an exciting segment.
Absolutely. And of course, there will also be successful investors, both with your personal bank concept and real estate investors. You'll be able to meet, get to know, ask them any questions. It's going to be an exciting event. Encourage you to register at yourpersonalbank.com. Seating is limited. This will sell out.
Yeah, this will sell out early. So you want to get booked in as quick as you possibly can. I'm looking forward to it. And again, thanks Money Radio for sponsoring it.
It's awesome.
Good to have them on board. Great, great station here.
Absolutely. So we've been discussing a lot of the changes with the upcoming administration, how it affects the economy, real estate. You mentioned something recently about HUD.
Yeah, boy, another government department that is so fat and so bloated and so inefficient, it's beyond comprehension. And like the FHA loan, it's gotten so off track what it was designed to be. I mean, the FHA loan, which went into effect in 1934, didn't really get its great roots until in the 50s because they did the VA program. So the boys coming home from the war could own a home, and it changed the world. I mean, it changed America and put us so far ahead economically of any other country because you literally had a whole generation with millions and millions of people who were destined to be renters who were suddenly homeowners. I mean, so what those programs do is amazing. They provide home ownership for the middle and the middle lower class. And that was what they were designed to do, and I believe in it firmly. But it's really gotten off track, because in most areas right now, the amount of money you can borrow on an FHA loan has nothing to do with a middle-class home. I mean, I know people who are buying 3,000, 3,500, 4,000 square foot, five-bedroom homes with a pool, and we're supporting it. We're paying for it. That's ludicrous. You know, so I think, you know, the simple solutions would be, look, if you really want to provide home ownership, then let's do it in a way that works for the people, really, and let's do it in a non-predatory fashion. So in 2014, Dodd-Frank became the law of the land. There's been a lot of stuff in the last year, literally a lot of stuff has come up about a lot of predatory lending practices that still continues. But the one thing, I mean, the pink elephant on the table, the elephant on the table that no one talks about is, look, the biggest predator in lending is the federal government. I mean, they are making loans to people that are unconscionable. Common sense, I mean, we've done thousands and thousands and thousands of owner finance transactions. With our students combined, we've done over 1 million of them. And we know for a fact that when you go above 33% debt-to-income ratio, you are bringing in such high-level failures. And what does that mean? Real world, if you make $6,000 a month take-home, your home can be $2,000 a month. And that's it. You can't pay more. It doesn't work. You know, the federal government has an FHA program, 57.999% of your income. So round it to 58% DTI. I mean, that's like guaranteed failure.
That's debt to income ratio.
Yeah, debt to income ratio. So it'd be literally, The FHA and VA do 41%. 41% is too high. So here's what I would do. And this is what, you know, boy, President Trump, when you're listening to Ference on Money Radio, or paying somebody to do it for you, sir, I would do this. I would literally just change it. I would change the FHA program to, look, we're going to take the median for the area. So Phoenix is $450,000 or so. So you can borrow up to $500,000, 10% above the median. That's what you can borrow, $500,000. So no more us paying for upper middle class homes. That's ludicrous. That's not what the programs are supposed to do. Why the heck should we? And then strict one-third DTI, debt to income. So you make $6,000, you can borrow $2,000. You take home $3,000, you can borrow $1,000. But then make it appealing. 2% fixed rate, locked in, and let's subsidize what we really want, which is regular people being able to own a home for real that they can keep and afford to. But then stop the games that are going on there. Stop this, you know, you live in it for a year and turn it into a rental and buy another one. No. That's not what the program was supposed to do, and it's being abused heavily right now. I would go with, you're locked into 5 years. You have to live in the home for 5 years as your primary residence. If you move or sell it, you have to give back a percentage. So if you're only there for a year, you have to give back 80% of the profits to the federal government because you didn't do the deal as you agreed to. Agreements are two ways, and we're far too much in this world where everybody just wants one-sided. And it's got to be two-sided. So I would lock it at 2%, no more than 33% DTI, bring it back into real pricing until we stay in middle class. And dang it, all those good, honest, decent, hardworking, God-fearing Americans who want to own a home, who make moderate income, let's get them one that they can earn and own. Not charity, not welfare, no entitlements. Let's just make this thing that it's available to all Americans, and let's increase
make it affordable.
And make it affordable, and then make it realistic affordable, but then have strings attached. You have to do your part. You need to live it 5 years. It needs to be your family home. You need to bring that stability to your family. You need to bring the responsibility. You need to make your own payments. But let's not set them up to fail, because you're not helping them when you make it no money down and you make it where half your income is supposed to go to the house payment. You're not helping people. You're hurting them. Because so many of those default.
If that was implemented, which that would be great for the country. But people, I would listen, because I have a feeling if that was actually implemented, it would actually negatively impact your business.
Yes, it would, but it would be the right thing to do.
I understand.
Yeah, no, I want that. Because obviously, you know, I have a private equity company since 1989, and we don't buy much of our real estate from people who are in distress who need to sell. It's just not that profitable as much as the social media makes it sound, because it's not. I mean, so most of our properties we buy are either from the lenders after a foreclosure or directly off the MLS. Just understanding the numbers, the patterns, you know, the rhythms of the marketplace, where we can position ourselves to do it. We've been doing it for 35 years. We haven't had a losing year, so we know what we're doing. And look, everything that I want the government to do doesn't have to be good for my pocketbook. Some things are just right and should be done.
I was asked this at a workshop last month. I was asked, what if Harris won and they instituted the unrealized capital gains tax? I said, I'd be probably the busiest man in the country, because everybody would want to get out of capital gains assets.
Everybody.
And they want to get into income or tax-free.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I wouldn't know what to do with myself. But I didn't want it because I know it'd be terrible for the country and for most people. They'd be hurting.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got to look at, I think it's one of the things that a movement we're having now. And look, I have complete empathy for everybody out there. With that said, anything great has to be built to serve the majority, not a very, very small minority. It just can't work that way. Now, the better the times, the better things are for the majority, more of the minority can be taken care of in the way that they want. But we have to look at the big picture always. And the big picture means everybody doesn't get everything they want all the time. It doesn't work that way. We've been trying to do that too much, both parties, with the federal government, which is why we're sitting on these deficits that are incomprehensible. I mean, we're not even talking, you know, I remember when it was billions, I was like, oh my God, billions. Now it's like, billion here, billion there, whatever.
John, a few weeks ago, it went up $100 billion in one day.
Right. And nobody cares.
The debt.
Yeah, it's just a lot of people care.
Yeah.
No one who was in charge of the $100 billion that day cared.
There you go.
And if they did, it snowballed so far out of control, they don't even know what to do anymore. So, yeah, it's just, you know, a common sense. President Trump understands real estate. So a couple of things that I'm really excited from an investment point of view is some of the tax benefits that we had that were expiring next year. I don't think they're expiring anymore. Section 179, not going anywhere. 199A, back in force, baby. The inheritance tax for you know, literally for what today is, you know, $2, $5, $10 million, $20 million, which is a lot of money. But in today's world, with the inflation and everything we've had, this is not like, these are not the Rockefellers, and that, you know, we were going to roll back to where you take a third or 50% of everything those people had made in their entire lifetime. That'll be back off the table. We'll be back to, you know, hey, you can, you know,
if you do well, you can keep it.
If you do well, your family can keep it, or you can choose where you want to go at your death. I work with a lot of clients who give a lot of their money to charity, but it's going to where they want, not the federal government to, well, piss it down the drain again.
And there's nothing more frustrating than that. You work hard, you pay your taxes, and it goes to something that's either wasteful or you completely disagree with.
Right.
It's fraudulent, whatever, and that's disheartening.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a new level of responsibility. One of the nice things is
transparency,
and President Trump can't run again, so he doesn't need to worry about making everybody happy to get reelected. He can do what he feels is in the best interest of the country, even if a lot of people disagree with it in the short term. Being president of the White House, I think, is just like anything else. The things that are really good for you, you have to work for. Like, if you're out of shape and you want to get in shape, you have to go exercise and you have to change your diet. Now, that's painful and it sucks for a little while. But then 60, 90 days later, when you're starting to get healthier, now it's great. So I'm looking forward to that in our administration with our economy.
Well, if you've enjoyed this this show today and you want to hear more of this, of John and I, register your personal bank to our event January 18th in Phoenix. Again, at yourpersonalbank.com. Seating will be very limited. John and I are going to be sharing just a lot of common sense.
A lot of great stuff. Yeah, I look forward to it. Everybody, before I see you in January, obviously have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas and God bless. Thank you, Ferentz. I appreciate it.
Amen, brother. And as long as it's on our money, in God we trust.
Financial literacy in America is almost non-existent. It's typically not taught in schools, the media, at work, or in the home. I'm Ferentz, host of the Your Personal Bank Show. If you would like me to speak to your investing group or an organization with a financial focus, please contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. My goal is to increase financial literacy and enhance your financial future. Again, it's 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com.
Contact Ferentz at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com. That's 866-268-4422. This show is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information.
Would you like to sponsor the Your Personal Bank Show hosted by Ferentz Toth? We are looking for like-minded partners who want to join our rapidly growing radio show. I frequently state, economic freedom is freedom. Thomas Jefferson wrote, a well-informed electorate is a prerequisite to democracy. Contact me at 866-268-4422 or yourpersonalbank.com to help increase financial literacy and protect our freedoms.
A gentle breeze blows across your face as you take a refreshing sip of water. appreciating the stillness of another morning fishing on the lake. The distant gurgle of a stream reminds you of days spent playing in the creek, the cool, clear water rushing between your toes. You love this time with nature, the feeling of putting everything on hold to connect with the world around you. Now, imagine it's all gone. No fish, no lake, no water. One of life's most vital resources, irreplaceably depleted. Time is running out to protect fresh water, and without our love, it can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our fresh water. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
This place has a pulse. You hear it in the canopy, feel it in the ground. Life, fully illuminated, engulfs you. From the birds singing in the treetops above to the tiniest insects in the soil below, you take a deep, cleansing breath, filling your lungs with the essence of the forest. Now, imagine it's all gone. Healthy, life-giving forests reduced to nothing. No singing birds, no lush canopy, and water and food in short supply around the world. Time is running out to protect our forests, and without our love, they can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our forests. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.